Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
On a Monday, we get going. It is the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Welcome into the program. Got you till 8 o'clock this evening. We have a busy show, as we normally do. And this kind of begins, I always, when people ask me about my job, I always tell them I have two separate jobs. I have the job that I do when the Cardinals are in season, so during baseball season, and it's a lot of late nights, and it's pregames, and it's postgames, and it's being at the ballpark, and it's being in the clubhouse, yada, 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 with the occasional two-hour show thrown in there at night on days of Cardinals day games and Cardinals off days. And then I have my Cardinals off-season job, and that is where I am hosting a sports program every single night, just about, and that's what we're doing. I believe we have Thursday Night Football this week, but outside of that, we'll have Sports Open Line every night this week, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. And today and tomorrow are, I think, days that we're talking a lot of Cardinals, and we're talking a lot about what was said at press conferences during the day. So tomorrow is going to be, with all due respect to John Mozeliak, and we'll talk a lot about what Mo had to say today, with all due respect to today's press conference with the outgoing president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak, tomorrow's press conference has a lot more intrigue to it when incoming president of baseball operations, Chaim Bloom, is going to speak. And for those of you who have not heard, we're going to have full coverage tomorrow. We're going to run the press conference starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, and it'll probably go somewhere between 30 and 45 minutes. And then after that, we're going to have the entire KMOX sports team gather, and we are going to be rolling on all the way to 1 o'clock in the afternoon talking through what we heard from Chaim Bloom. So that's going to be from 10 a.m. to 1 o'clock tomorrow is going to be full coverage of the Chaim Bloom press conference. Of course, they'll talk about it a little bit during the Dave Glover show, and then we'll be back doing Rush Hour Sports and also Sports Open Line tomorrow evening and continuing to talk through it. So what we're telling you is we got you covered. We've got you fully covered tomorrow when it comes to that. As far as today, the Mo press conference, I don't think there's anything like groundbreaking that was said. I appreciated his gratitude for being in that position and to the appreciation of the folks that he has been able to be around all these years. I appreciated his pride of what the vast majority of his tenure looked like. I appreciated his candor in saying that it's time for a new voice and that he sensed that. Of everything that was said, I thought there was a lot of interesting things that were said. But there was only one thing that was said that like piqued my interest in terms of what this thing is going to look like moving forward. Because Mo said, essentially, I'm paraphrasing. And by the way, we'll in our second hour, we've got a couple guests on today. I should probably tell you what's coming up on the show. That would make sense. In about 10 minutes or so, our friend Brendan Schaefer from writes for KMOV, also writes for STL Sports Central and does some of their video content as well. Brendan's going to be with us in like 10 minutes or so. And then just after the 7 o'clock news, Chris Gervino from Mizzou is going to be with us. We'll talk all things Mizzou football with him coming up. But we'll mostly be baseball today coming off the John Mozeliak press conference. The thing that he said today that I most kind of glommed onto as, okay, that's notable, because I know he's part of the planning, I know it's not like every time that the DeWitt's called in Heim Bloom to talk about what the organization is going to look like moving forward, and Rob Serfolio was there and other people were there. It's not like John Mozeliak was asked to leave the room, right? Like he's been part of the planning process of what things are going to look like moving forward. So I think it was John Denton from MLB.com, Cardinals.com, who asked Mo about never rebuilding. And he recited a quote that Mo had said a number of years ago about, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals don't rebuild. And Mo said that he was proud of the fact that in his entire tenure, they never went through a full, legit rebuild. Now, we can argue what this year was. They worked really, really hard not to call it a rebuild. Reset, rebuild, a reset, retool, runway, like all the other R words. They didn't call it a rebuild. But assuming this thing goes down the path that I expect it to go down, we're going to be able to really say this was the first domino being pushed down for a rebuild. They were in a rebuild. But they were also, they had some veterans that stuck around. They were competitive for much of the year. They got off to a nice start, especially in the month of May. All these things were absolutely true. So Mo's point was that they hadn't been under, they hadn't gone through a rebuild under his regime. But then he added on, that might change. I'm paraphrasing, but you'll hear the quote later on. That might change, based off what you're going to hear tomorrow. If the Cardinals are like staying the course, if the Cardinals are feeling like they can compete next year, if the Cardinals are planning on keeping these veteran players and a bunch of other guys around and they're looking at the standings and saying, hey, you know what? This team wasn't that far away from being a postseason club. You just got to tweak here, tweak there, and everything's going to be good. If that's the plan moving forward, I don't think Mo is sitting here saying, you might hear something different tomorrow. That was unprompted. You might hear something different tomorrow. And a lot of times what I do and what people who listen to other people talk do is we listen for the cues on if you read between the lines, what might actually be said. Now, we can also just wait 24 hours and we can get the answer tomorrow. And we don't have to like surmise anything, but part of the job is to talk through this. So today was Mo. And I did think that the most important thing he said was, you might hear something different tomorrow. Because I have long thought, and when I say long thought, I mean for the past few weeks, month plus, when it became pretty evident that this Cardinals team just wasn't, they didn't do the thing, they had an opportunity. Let me put it this way. The Cardinals had an opportunity this year with this group to show that they could just retool, they could just reset, that this group could take a step forward and they could perform at a high level and maybe they were closer to where the organization wanted to be than they thought they were. And we learned this year that that's just not the case. They had a negative run differential by a bunch. They had a lot of things that were just not good and they don't compare to a lot of other very good teams in Major League Baseball. And now they're going to try to do some things to get themselves back to that point. And as painful as it might be, and it's going to be painful for many Cardinals fans, as painful as it might be, I think their plan is going to be to strip this thing down pretty good and a path to try to get as much talent into the organization as possible that eventually they can win at a pretty high level. We'll hear from Heim Bloom tomorrow. We'll get more of an idea. Maybe I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll tell you I'm wrong tomorrow. I never have a hard time telling you when I'm wrong. I don't get everything right, but that's the way I view it. That's the way I see it. And we'll know for sure tomorrow at 10, a little bit after 10 o'clock in the morning when Heim Bloom starts talking. Brendan Schaefer was with me over at Busch Stadium today for the John Mozeliak press conference. We'll get his thoughts on what was said and what he's expecting out of the Heim Bloom press conference tomorrow. That's coming up. We'll talk with Brendan coming up after this break. Don't go anywhere. It's the Graybar Sports Overline on KMOX. Yeah, it's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly with you till 8 o'clock this evening, talking through the John Mozeliak press conference from earlier today. Also looking forward to the Heim Bloom press conference coming up tomorrow, which kind of signifies the next era of Cardinals baseball. He was covering the press conference just like I was earlier today. You read him both at KMOV.com and over at STL Sports Central. He's also part, does a lot more for STL Sports Central, some of their video content with their Cardinals shows during the day and their post-game shows and everything. He's a good friend, Brendan Schaefer. You follow him on Twitter at BSchaefer12. Brendan, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Yeah, doing well, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
I will let everybody know that you had to get out of child putting to bed duty to be able to do this interview. So thank you for just ignoring your child to be able to do this.
No, I was actually, we were in the backyard throwing pitches and we had to have a bullpen change happen there for that. So we're good for a little while.
Okay, very good. Very general question, and then we'll lock in a little bit. What struck you from what was said today by John Mozeliak?
You know, it was very reflective in the nature of it. And I think that makes sense, knowing that there's another press conference looming for tomorrow. And that's the one that may be more instructive for Cardinals fans about the future of the organization and the direction that things will be heading under Heim Bloom. But for Mozeliak, a guy that, I mean, his service in the Cardinals organization spans just about my entire lifetime with how long he had been with the team. And, you know, for almost 20 years as the head baseball executive, the GM, and then elevated to the Pobo title. Like, that's deserving in and of itself of Mo to have the opportunity to say goodbye, prepare anything he wanted to say, and be able to part on those terms. And reflecting on the fact that there was certainly more good than bad that happened under John Mozeliak's tenure, but obviously, and he acknowledged it in his opening remarks, Matt, that I thought was interesting, where he said, the question's been asked of him, why step away now? Why is now the time? And acknowledged, kind of hearing the drumbeat get louder as far as maybe the organization needing that new voice and that fresh leadership, and just kind of understanding that now might just be the best time for all involved. So I think just him kind of acknowledging maybe some of what fan base has felt for the last couple of years, I think was sort of the closure that everybody's looking for before a new chapter begins tomorrow.
There was a line of questioning. You were involved in it. Kind of looking back at this season, could have they done less at the trade deadline? Could have they done more at the trade deadline? Are there regrets on not adding to the roster before the season when you see what happened with the Reds sneaking into the postseason? It seemed like Mo was very much in a no-regrets mood. Were you surprised at all by anything he said?
I wasn't surprised by that, and it was. He even said, I don't have any regrets. I think part of it, too, is you got to realize maybe the extent to which they, he even joked with a question asked by Daniel Guerrero where he said, my hands were tied, and kind of laughed it off. But, I do think to an extent there were decisions that were made to try and just sort of keep the status quo and allow for the maximum flexibility when it comes to roster matters for Heim Bloom when he comes in. I think that was certainly accomplished. Did it leave a little bit of meat on the bone? I think there are some times you could look back and say that maybe that happened. Did we know that it was going to be that attainable at the very end? And just how close the Cardinals would come going into the final weekend, really just having been eliminated? Yeah, maybe we underestimated just how kind of mediocre the situation could be there in the National League wildcard chase. But yeah, it didn't seem like there was anything to regret from Mo, and I think Cardinals fans may hear that and kind of roll their eyes a little, but I would just remind people that I think there was always more going on behind the scenes as to how they wanted to set up this next iteration, that it wasn't going to be a go-for-it year. There were certainly moments that I thought they should have done some things differently to maximize their chances to win, but ultimately I think it was more of a bigger picture type of year in the way that Mo and probably ownership wanted for him to approach it.
Shouldn't we have arguably seen that coming when spring training got started and they weren't able to work out a multi-year deal with Brendan Donovan? I mean, that just seems like that's a classic keep the palate clean type decision for Heim Bloom.
Yeah, I think it goes all the way back to that. And, you know, at the time we would look at Donovan and probably would have looked at Lars Nootbaar and said, like, okay, it's kind of that year to show it, show the durability, show the consistency, and then, you know, it should be rewarded, I think, with extension offers coming right around this time. Now, the rhetoric and the reporting that we have seen, maybe it will be confirmed tomorrow, about maybe leaning in a little bit harder to the concept of a rebuild than they certainly had the desire to discuss or do within the context of 2025. Does that change things for a guy like Brendan Donovan, who I do think proved just about what you would want to see to feel like he's a guy to build around? But if the Cardinals are just at stage one of building, Matt, and aren't necessarily picturing adding from the outside and really going for it within the next couple of years, does that completely change the tenor for what Donovan's situation is? I think that was just one of several examples where the Cardinals weren't going to do anything significant to alter the course of what decisions could be made by the next regime.
Yeah, I thought the most notable thing that was said by Mo today was he said, you know, there's never been a rebuild in my tenure, but that may not be the message you hear tomorrow. And to me, that he knows what the message is going to be tomorrow. So I feel like there's a little bit of a telegraph going on there with what's being said. That makes me feel like we might hear that rebuild word coming up tomorrow with Heim.
Yeah, I do think that you'll hear it. And I think, like, there's sort of layers to what that really means. One layer is, I think, an obvious layer in what's been reported over the last week. Like, we're back to square one with those veterans that have contracts and letting those guys know, like, hey, I know you've got a no trade clause, but this is how it's going to look the next year or two. For Sonny Gray, for Nolan Arenado, and even for Wilson Contreras, who seems to be, of the three, the guy that's most likely to stick around with the Cardinals based on his own personal preference. But, like, that's stuff that I think just makes general sense if you're really not all in on next year. Maybe you can get some money off the books. Maybe you could, what I would like to see is redirect some of that money that you may save via trade and try to find a different way to plug a hole or two on your roster. But if it's simply, you know, kind of taking that step back and really diving into the rebuild concept, what does that end up meaning for the team production the next couple of years? And beyond that, if you're going that far, are you going to take it even further with guys that have real trade value because they aren't to free agency yet and have a couple of years of team control, if not more? Like, the extent to which they really want to tear this thing down through off-season trades is going to be interesting to see. We may not get the full answer to what that looks like tomorrow, but hopefully we do get a better idea and can glean from some of the answers that Heim Bloom will have to those questions.
Those three guys you mentioned have all changed their stance a little bit. Arenado has said he'll put more teams on the list of teams that he'd be willing to move to. Sonny Gray has been open about the fact that he would be open to a trade, even Contreras, while saying, you know, he'd like to stay in St. Louis. He would at least listen if there was something that was made sense that was presented. All three of those stances, Brendan, are different from what they were saying just 1 year ago.
Yeah, Arenado was pretty exclusive with it last year, to the point that, you know, a team that was actually on his okay list ended up having a trade in place for him, and he said no to that. So that's, it, you know, definitely a change in stance, and it's partially, I think, due to his own performance. Like, he wanted to bet on himself a little bit with a bounce back year and be a little bit more picky, thinking that down the road he would be able to have the situation materialize that he might prefer. But his numbers went down this year, and he, you know, had some injury issues. And so the extent to which he has the leverage now is very much in question. With Sonny Gray, it makes sense because he signed that 3-year contract and said, man, I'd only been here 1 year. Let's kind of let me get my bearings a bit and see where this thing goes with the talent we have in the room. But the Cardinals fell short, and it doesn't seem like they're itching to, you know, turn it around immediately when you're talking about a rebuild. So for Sonny going into the final year of a deal, I think it makes perfect sense for him to be somebody that would definitely be open to a trade to a contender. And he should have some value. I didn't think he pitched his best this year, but still a solid season from him. And there's going to be a team that, even if the Cardinals have to eat some of that money on the $35 million, I think can certainly provide some value. And then Wilson's the one where, like, I think he wanted to stay and still would like to stay, but sees the writing on the wall and isn't going to rule anything out. And that probably makes sense. I hope he stays personally, because I do think the Cardinals need some guys like that in the room to, you know, continue ushering in the next era. But at the same time, it somebody that you probably could get some value for as well, because he's played well. He's hitting well, and I think that plays into it too.
And then almost assuredly, some players from the group of Nootbaar, Gorman, Donovan, Burleson are going to get moved as well. And we've known that all year long.
Yeah, and that was something that that was kind of the genesis of my question to Mo, wondering could they have done a little bit more at the deadline, and was the reason they didn't just to keep the slate pretty clean for the next guy? And he said if something was compelling, they would have, you know, considered it and probably had that conversation, but nothing was really that imminent. But yeah, those lefty bats that all have still a little bit of team control remaining, you try to sort through and figure out exactly, you know, who might have the most value. But is that the guy to trade? If the guy with the most value is maybe better served just sticking on your team, how do the Cardinals under Chaim Bloom view that? It's going to be very interesting to denote just how far they want to go with it. But man, the one that really screams out to me, and I'll be eager to listen to the answers about tomorrow, is specifically Brendan Donovan, just because I think in any other era of the DeWitt ownership, Matt, we would be seeing the Cardinals extending Donovan this offseason. Like, it's the timeline that would make sense if the Cardinals were operating business as usual. But we know that's not the case. And so how much of a change in that sort of mindset ends up happening with relation to a player that I think a lot of Cardinals fans appreciate what he brings to the table, both on the field and in the clubhouse.
Final question for Brendan Schaefer. You read him at KMOV.com and also a part of the team at STL Sports Central. Knowing full well that even during a rebuild, a team can sneak into the playoffs, that they were just barely out this year. You don't have to overachieve that much to get to a playoff position. Knowing that, and we'll see what happens moving forward, they've gone 3 years without being a playoff team. If they're really embarking on a legitimate rebuild that could take 2 or 3 years, do you feel like Cardinals fans are ready for a 5-6 year playoff absence?
No. No, I've said all along that I just don't see the stomach or the appetite for it. People say that they're tired of being in the middle, but I think what really Cardinals fans want is to, you know, see the homegrown talent be able to emerge and be able to produce star caliber players that can then get the Cardinals back to where they're on the cusp, and you use free agency to add. And ownership has always been willing to do that. But did they get so far behind the eight ball here where it's going to take a little bit to ramp it back up? My ideal would be that you've got a couple of pitchers. It's really all about the pitching, Matt, because yeah. I think the lineup is going to be pretty similar next year, and there's still some younger players that could mature and develop. But on the pitching side, like, if they don't want to spend in free agency, I don't know what that 1-5 looks like, especially if you're offloading a Sonny Gray this offseason. So just to maybe make a couple of savvy moves in free agency, maybe of that Phil Maton tier, but when it comes to some starting pitching, that could really go a long way toward keeping the Cardinals competitive. But I don't know if their goal is to keep it afloat or if it's just to kind of let what happens run its course as they build it up from beneath, which, like you said, could take several years. And I just don't know if we're talking about 9,500 losses in St. Louis for the coming seasons. I just don't know how Cardinals fans are going to enjoy that. I think I do know, and it's not going to be pretty if it ends up going that way.
Yeah, if Gray's gone, Libertor and McGreevy are the only foregone conclusions in the rotation at the start of next season.
Yeah, and then you figure out Pallante, but his performance has certainly waned. Kyle Leahy, I love that they're talking about trotting him out as a guy in spring training that can vie for a rotation spot, but I just don't know, when you think about like Quinn Matthews and a Liam Doyle, are they ready to jump into a rotation next April? I think it could maybe be a little bit longer. And if they're really, you know, worried about trying to win as many ball games as they can, they'll spend the $5 or $7 or $12 million to get some pitching. But if not, if it's really going to be lean times, yeah, you're going to be waiting on those prospects for promotions and hoping that it works out, because Matt, not every rebuild just turns into the kind of pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So this is one of the most interesting moments in the Cardinals org for a while, seeing what Chaim Bloom has to say tomorrow.
Pirates have been rebuilding for 20 years and it hasn't worked for them. He is Brendan Schaefer. You follow him on Twitter at BSchaefer12. Read him over at KMOV.com. Also read him, see him at STL Sports Central. Brendan, I assume I'll see you again tomorrow. So have a wonderful evening, and we'll be back at it in the Busch Stadium press conference room tomorrow.
Sounds good to me, Matt. See you tomorrow.
All right, very good. That's Brendan Schaefer joining us here on the program. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. I wanted to open it up to you a little bit, and I do want to, not to tell you what you have to say, but kind of the topic that I want to go with, thoughts on what Mo said today. Do you have thoughts? And maybe nobody has thoughts. You know, people do have John Mozeliak fatigue. I understand that. I get that. But just based off what he said today, maybe it is the thing that I pulled out, where he kind of has telegraphed a legit rebuild. Maybe it's something else. If you've got thoughts on what Mo had to say today, you can call or text 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, or for those of you who are watching on the video stream, just leave a comment in the chat, and we will get to you. We've got more coming up.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In just a moment, as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back in on KMOX is the Graybar Sports Open Line. We're talking through some of what John Mozeliak had to say today. If you want to chime in, you can do so by calling or texting 314-436-7900, tweeting at me, at Matt Pauly on air, or leaving a comment on the chat on the video stream. Let's start with Morton, who's giving us a call. Hey, Morton, you're on Sports Open Line.
Good evening. Thanks for the opportunity to chat with you on the phone.
Yeah.
I have two comments, please. Number one, many of my friends do not understand why Mozeliak was still with the organization, being a lame duck president for the last year, instead of building immediately when Bloom was announced that he was going to become president. And also, I know I know Bob Melvin was let go today, and he was an experienced manager, and I realize the team's only as good as the players, but he was only there for 2 years. Why is Marmol still going to be around?
Yeah, appreciate the phone call, Morton. So let's get to the first part. The reason the Cardinals did what they did with Mo, two parts. Part number one is he was under contract through this year, and they didn't want to remove him as president of baseball operations. They knew he would be done after this year, so they got a succession plan in place, and he stayed there. That's part of it. The more important part here, and this is the much more important part, with all due respect to what was going on with the Major League roster this year, and I'm not trying to be dismissive of Mo's responsibilities this season, but for this Cardinals team to get back to contending at the highest level, what has to happen is they have to start producing high-level talent, and they have to do that through their farm system. So with all due respect to what was happening at the Major League side of things, the work that Chaim Bloom was doing to get the infrastructure put in place at the minor league level from a long-term perspective, it was a lot more important than what was going on with these Major League roster decisions. So Chaim was able to focus on player development. Chaim was able to get what he wanted in place. Earlier today when we were doing Redbird Rush Hour, Bernie Miklas mentioned the fact that he had a conversation with Keith Law recently where Keith said a lot of these players in the Cardinals minor league system have excelled in a major way just because the Cardinals have the things in place now, the infrastructure in place to help minor league players become closer to the best version of themselves. So I will be the first to admit it was a little bit clunky because you had John Mozeliak as the president of baseball operations, and you had a bunch of people who were hired to work for Chaim Bloom who were in those secondary positions, and that seems a little bit odd. But Chaim was involved when he needed to be on major league decisions, but more importantly, he was doing the work that needed to be, you know, laying the groundwork for the minor league system to kick up once again. Let's grab Paul, who's given us a call. Hey, Paul, you are on a Graybar Sports Open Line.
Yes. I really appreciate your program, and I enjoy listening to you. My question is, during tomorrow morning's press conference, when Chaim Bloom is introduced as a new director of baseball operations, will they also introduce Yadier Molina as a new Cardinals manager?
No.
Why not?
Because Oliver Marmol is the Cardinals manager.
Yeah, I know he is right now, but would it surprise everybody if Chaim Bloom decided to go in a different direction?
Yes. Like, I'm not trying to... Oliver Marmol's going to be the Cardinals manager next season.
But he's not under contract.
Yeah, he is. He's got one more year left on his deal.
Oh, he's got one more year? Yep. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking that his contract had expired.
No, like, I'm not saying that Oliver Marmol is the long-term manager of the Cardinals. I'm not saying that's for sure going to work with him and Bloom. I think it probably is. I think they're going to be work well together, but there is not going to be a managerial change going into next season, Paul.
You think that's a good decision or bad?
I think it's a good decision. I appreciate the phone call. I'm an Ollie guy. So people who are not Ollie guys are going to disagree with me. People who like Ollie are going to agree with me. And we've done the conversation for a while. I like Oliver Marmol. I don't think he's a perfect manager. There's stuff he does that I disagree with. We bring up all the time the things that he does that I respectfully disagree with him on. But I am excited. I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to see how Ollie does when the head of baseball operations is different than John Mozeliak, because I think a lot of the stuff that got blamed to Ollie was part more of some organizational standpoints, and that's going to look different moving forward. And I'll say, look, is there a scenario where they get into this season, and now that Chaim and Ollie are in the trenches together, that the two sides say, you know what, this isn't working, and they move on? Yeah, there's a possibility. I hope that doesn't happen because I like Ollie, but I'm open to that possibility. If they have a 70-win season next year, even in a full rebuild, how much tougher does that make it? Like, to many, there are some public relations aspects to bringing back Ollie that are not fantastic. But I like Ollie. I think he's a good manager, and I think it. I'm intrigued to see what it looks like when he is working under Chaim Bloom. Let's grab Jim, who's given us a call. Hey, Jim, you are on Sports Open Line.
Hey, I agree with you with Ollie. He's just not given anything to work with. But my point was, when John Mozeliak took over the team, we had one of the best minor leagues in baseball that Walt Jocketty built up. Mm-hmm. How do you expect to win when you're not producing good players? I think they're almost pretty close to dead last.
Well, not anymore. They jumped up big time in the last 2 years. They're a top 10 minor league system now, Jim.
Yeah, they just, and you know what? And they're going to, regardless, they're going to have to spend money. They're going to have to go out and get, or we're going to be, you know, I don't know if you remember the 90s. I don't know if you lived here.
Yeah, I did.
When we had Joe Torre as the manager, and everybody's like, oh, get rid of him. You know, and then what did he do? Went on to the Yankees and, you know, got some players. And I just, building a minor league system is a good thing to do, but I think you still got to go outside the organization and build up too. I mean, if not, I think we're going to be sitting in dead last for about the next 5-7 years. I just don't see much of a turnaround quick.
Okay, Jim.
It sucks, but that's the way it is.
I appreciate the phone call. I think, look, I have confidence that the organization is going to start spending money again when they're ready to win. They have to do that. Jim is 100% right that you can't just do it all from player development. But what you have to do is you have to fill in the back end of the roster and player development. The poster childs of what went wrong for Cardinals baseball in the last few years, and this is nothing against them and nothing against their performances, but it's Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn. When you're going and spending $25 million on those two guys combined and they're back of the rotation starters, no. Those, take $25 million and spend it on one dude who's an all-star caliber player and fill in the back of your roster with guys that you are developing. And in the last 2 years where Chaim Bloom has been involved in the minor league system, and more specifically in the last 1 year where where he's been very involved in the minor league system, the Cardinals minor league rankings have moved up in a big, big way. Let's grab one more phone call before we are done. Is that Tom? Is Tom our next one? All right, Tom, you are on Sports Open Line.
Thank you for taking my call. My comment is, I wish the Cardinals would start living up to the contracts they sign. They are always so happy when they steal these guys from other clubs, and they're paying most of the salary. And then when they get older, and it's naturally going to fall off, maybe to a lesser degree, but it's still – Cam Fowler's not going to be the player 4 years from now he is today, but the Blues realize it. And 4 years from now, they're going to stand behind that contract or they'll release him and pay the money. And that's what the Cardinals need to do. They can't just keep signing these contracts, and then when it gets to the end where they're going to pay for it, start whining to all of us. You know what I'm saying? Think about it before you sign the contracts. So we don't have to go through this again.
I think they're only trying – they're in a rebuild right now. If they were in a competitive window right now, they wouldn't be trying to move on from a Sonny Gray, who's who I'm guessing you're specifically talking about here.
No, I was really talking more about Arenado and Goldschmidt, because then they get sweetheart deals when they got those guys to where the Rockies were paying most of the money, I thought.
Yeah, Goldschmidt's contract came up. He left as a free agent. And yes, you're right about Arenado. But it's also a point in Arenado's career where he wants to probably be somewhere where he's got a chance to win a World Series. He is a declining player. He's not worth the money that they're paying him anymore.
I agree with you, but they shouldn't have signed a contract with him then. You know, you have to live up to the contracts you sign, and they won't do that. They say, well, we're going to play him regardless, instead of being men about it and saying, we have to kind of eat some of the salary because we made a bad decision to sign him to this contract. Not that he's made a bad decision, he's not playing as good. You have to take some responsibility also.
I mean, to be fair, the Rockies signed to that deal. They added one more to make it work with the Cardinals, but it was a Rockies contract. But I get what you're saying in that. I got to get to break, so I appreciate the phone call, Tom. This happens. If you're not in a competitive window and you got dudes who are making lots of money and they're not living up to their contract, you move on from them. Happens in baseball, happens in football, happens in every sport. And you might not like the optics of it, but it's the way sports works. We'll take a break. We've got more coming up in just a moment. This is a Graybar.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one of the program, it's the Graybar Sports Open Line. Chris Trevino is going to join us just after the 7 o'clock news. We'll talk all things Mizzou football with him. Just a few more moments here in hour number one. Got a message on the stream asking how much money will the Cardinals probably have to eat of Sonny Gray's contract if they trade him? I think it depends on what you're getting back. I would argue that Gray is still a really good pitcher, and he's got 1 year left on his deal. And the old adage is there's no such thing as a bad one-year contract. So if you can get somebody to eat the entire contract and you feel pretty comfortable with what the return is, I'm sure they would prefer that. That being said, if you do have an opportunity to get a more high-level prospect – and it's going to cost you a few bucks to do it by eating some of Sonny's contract, I think you have to do that. And that's probably where they're at, and that's going to be one of the interesting things that plays out. This is an organization right now that wants to add as much talent as possible into the minor leagues. That's what they did during the trade deadline. I had to chuckle because the day after the trade deadline, everybody was talking about how the New York Mets – had this incredible trade deadline and how they barely gave up anything for all the pieces that they got. And we saw them really struggle. And we saw them with a huge payroll not make it into the playoffs. And some of the guys that they traded away had nice starts to their new organizations. So, yeah, you don't always judge things based off how things look the day after. Sometimes it takes a little while longer. And for the Mets, we can judge their trade deadline now because they missed out on the postseason. We'll see what those players that the Cardinals got for Helsley, what that ends up looking like moving forward. Garland sends in a message, says that the Cardinals have player issues, not a manager issue at this time. And also another message saying that they'd like to see Ollie get an extension. I've had a bunch of conversations with people about that recently because, generally speaking, you don't want a manager to go into a season as a lame duck manager. If there was ever a time for that to happen, though, I'm actually comfortable with it here. And if the Cardinals choose to give Ollie an extension, that's fine. And honestly, it doesn't mean anything. All it means is that if you move on from him at some point, you might have to pay a little bit of a buyout. So if they want to give him an extension, that's fine. But I think this is, like I said earlier, this is the year where Ollie and Haim figure out if this is a good partnership, a good marriage between the two to be able to work together in what the Cardinals are trying to get back to. And if it is a good situation, then you talk to him about an extension. If not, that's where you make the decision to part ways. Text message coming in says, do I see the Mets firing their manager or their president of baseball operations? And says perhaps Albert headed to the Big Apple. They've already said their manager is coming back. And no, they're not going to move on from David Stearns. David Stearns is a highly respected president of baseball operations. Absolute failure to finish out the season for the New York Mets, not giving anybody a pass on that one. But Stearns is good at his job. And honestly, you just got to let him do his job. That owner is a meddling owner. And yeah, even bringing in Juan Soto, who is very productive, that didn't seem like a David Stearns type move. So I would think that just let David Stearns do his thing and the Mets are going to be fine moving forward. But they're not in the playoffs this year. We're going to talk with Chris Trevino. We'll talk Mizzou football. That's coming up in just a moment here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
It is the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley, into hour number two of the program. Coming up later on this hour, we're going to relive the John Mozeliak press conference. Not going to play the whole thing for you, but what we're going to do is take some of his cuts that he had, some of the key talking points that he had today, and we'll play those back for you, and I'll give you some of my thoughts. But right now, very happy to welcome on to the program, part of the radio network for Mizzou Athletics and Mizzou football. He is Chris Trevino. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time. Good to talk to you once again.
Hey, Matt, thank you. Good to be on with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mizzou wins, as they were expected to do this past weekend. UMass, bluntly, is not a very good team, but it seems like the season's kind of working out well, where you have a tough game and then you're able to kind of take a step back. But now from here, it's going to get a whole lot tougher between now and the end of the season.
Well, no question about it. They have really taken advantage of their schedule that was set up well with all the home games, of course, very unique in terms of five straight to start at home. And they'll have a sixth in a row after a bye as they prepare for Alabama on Saturday, the 11th of October. Bama, of course, has a tough game against Vanderbilt, and that is a tough game anymore. And, of course, they just played Georgia. But, yeah, Missouri's really taking care of business, and so far so good at 5-0. But I think it's really what most of us expected, and you're exactly right. Now it really gets challenging. Conference games the rest of the way, all seven of them.
The two real tough matchups that they've had so far, they beat Kansas in a big-time rivalry game, and then they take care of business against a good South Carolina team. Specifically to those two games, what did you learn about this Missouri football team?
Well, I thought in preseason they really had a good deep roster, and Coach Drinkwitz himself said it's his best team he's had in terms of personnel and depth. And you never know until you see them get out on the field and play somebody. And by somebody, I mean really somebody. And I think Kansas and South Carolina are both legit teams, certainly in power conferences. And, Missouri really dominated those two teams in two games. Now, the scores were relatively close, an 11-point win over Kansas, 9-point win over South Carolina. Certainly, games were not decided until well in the fourth quarter. But gosh, you look statistically at those games, you would have thought Missouri would have won by a lot more, because they really dominated Kansas in terms of total yardage, first downs, time of possession. And it was unbelievable against South Carolina, almost like anything I hadn't seen before. 285 yards rushing for Missouri, I think -6 for Carolina. So, they really controlled those games. But the the one thing, of course, that is always a factor is turnovers. And Missouri didn't have many, but they had a big one in each of those games. Of course, a scoop and score on the fumble by quarterback Bo Prabula that Kansas cashed in on and took the lead early. And then they also had a turnover against South Carolina. And, of course, the one against UMass last week, it didn't really cost them because they were playing such an overmatched opponent. But that's one thing. They've had some turnovers now these last three games. And you know, they didn't cost them the game, but they made it a lot closer against the two power conference schools. And really it should have been if you saw most of that game.
Bo Prabula has been really good, has completed better than 75% of his passes, better than 1,200 yards passing, 3-1 touchdown interception ratio, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Were you expecting this from him, or is this even better than expected?
You know, he's been really good, probably a little better than expected. And again, I want to see it against the conference now because it really steps up the competition clearly. But I knew at Penn State, he didn't get on the field much, obviously, behind Drew Aller, who many have thought it'll be a high draft pick and came here wanting to play. But when he played at Penn State, he gave a good account of himself. Last year, the biggest game that he had was at Wisconsin when Penn State, led by Prabula, came back with a pair of fourth quarter touchdowns. He was 11 of 13 passing, 98 yards, a couple of scores, ran for 50 yards, all coming on and leading his team to come back. So he'd played a little bit, but not much. But, you know, I had a feeling he'd be the guy, and I liked what I saw in preseason camp. And he's been really good. You're right. The completion percentage, the fact that he's running the ball so well. Again, it's not like he's throwing interception after interception. I think he's just got to be careful because he had a fumble that was a scoop and score and then a couple of picks. And you've just got to be really clean in the SEC with that meat of the schedule coming here quickly.
You mentioned the rushing yards compared to South Carolina, which that differential was insane. And I don't know the last time I saw anything like that. Ahmad Hardy is such a big part of that. The 730 yards through five games. And Chris, as I look at his stat line, one of the things that's most impressive, he only has 6 negative yards this year. This is a guy who finds a way to get positive yardage on almost every single time he touches the football.
Absolutely. That's probably the most impressive thing about him, and the yards after contact. I mean, he's just incredible. You know, you get frustrated sometimes seeing these backs go east and west, as we say, but he is a north and south downhill runner, and he's quick to the hole, and then if somebody comes up, he will just run that person over. And I will tell you, Matt, again, out at camp, he's a guy that really jumped out at me more than anyone. I heard good things about him, but I mentioned this on the air the other night. When I saw him in preseason camp, my eyes about popped out of my head. I mean, he just was a difference maker and was just running people over. And you know, if he'd get past him, they couldn't catch him. And he's been outstanding. And, you know, Drinkwitz will tell you, and I think most people realize this about football teams, if you can run the ball and stop the other team's running game, that gives you a really good chance to win a lot of games. And that's been Missouri's recipe for success. Their rushing attack and their rushing defense has just been as good as you could expect for so far.
We're continuing to talk Mizzou football with our friend Chris Trevino. They're going into a bye week, and then they'll match up against an Alabama team that just had a fantastic win against Georgia. They'll be catching Alabama after a game against Vanderbilt. How valuable can this bye week be going into what is the toughest matchup of the year so far and one of the two or three toughest matchups of the season overall?
Right. Well, again, I think that schedule sets up well. I think this is part of it. Missouri has a bye week, so they'll go 2 weeks from last Saturday's win over UMass to the game against Alabama. Meanwhile, Alabama comes off a hard-fought, impressive win at Georgia. But while Missouri's resting this coming Saturday, Bama plays Vanderbilt. And, of course, Vandy beat Alabama last year. And Vanderbilt is so improved. And the one thing they are a physical football team. I mean, they, again, like Missouri's been doing this year, they will run the ball a lot. And they work to stop the run. Of course, Clark Lee, their head coach, former defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. Their quarterback, Diego Pavia, is so impressive and just a physical runner for a quarterback. I've seen a lot of running quarterbacks in my day, but never someone that just almost welcomes, if not initiates, contact. He's just a physical quarterback, almost like a running back there. And that's a good, solid team. I mean, Missouri had to come from behind last year to get that game to overtime and then to beat Vandy here at Faurot Field in overtime. So that's a real contest Saturday between Vanderbilt and Alabama. And no matter what happens on the scoreboard, you got to think that's going to take a bit of a physical toll on the Crimson Tide, who then have to get on the road and come here. So, again, the schedule sets up beautifully for Missouri for playing an SEC slate of games. It's about as good as it gets, and they'll look to keep it rolling, albeit against a really good team, certainly the best one by far they'll have played thus far.
Are you at all surprised that right now, in terms of rankings, the top three ranked teams out of the SEC are Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M? It's not Alabama. It's not Georgia. It's not LSU. It's not the classic SEC powers that, as we speak right now, and obviously a lot can change week to week in this conference, but those are the schools right now that are leading the way.
Right, and I think that's a good observation on your part. And, you know, that'll all shake itself out by the end of the season. We'll see if those teams are legit. Of course, Ole Miss just had the big win over LSU to stay unbeaten. Oklahoma has been really good. I mean, if their quarterback comes back healthy, Mateer, from the hand surgery, and they're saying he'll be back in about a month, that's about as tough a game as Missouri might have on its schedule, a road game at Oklahoma. That was a really good defense last year that, again, Missouri came from behind to beat at home late in the fourth quarter on a defensive touchdown. So, you know, Missouri's got to play these teams, Auburn, Vandy, Oklahoma, Arkansas on the road. Now, Arkansas just changed coaches. They may be hanging by threads at the end of the year. But all four of those teams, Missouri, yes, beat them last year, but at home and had to come back late in the fourth quarter, or in Vandy's case, overtime. So SEC is changing a little bit, but and I think Texas A&M is a good team. I've seen them. They've really got some firepower and a strong defense, and they really embarrassed Missouri last year in College Station. So Mizzou has the big games coming up, Bama and A&M at home, and, of course, at Oklahoma late November. So, you know, they're really going to have to prove themselves, not just the Tigers, but all those teams, to show who is legit and who can come through what's a grinder of an SEC schedule. And next year we go to 9 conference games, which will really be a blast, at least to watch, but probably not to coach in.
Did you like that? Did you like the rivalry games that were assigned to Missouri?
I did. I loved it. I knew it was going to be Oklahoma and Arkansas. Those were the two we had been told about for sure and had heard well ahead of time, and nothing changed there. Texas A&M might have surprised some, but really, you know, Missouri and A&M left the Big 12 for the SEC at the same time. They've had some good games, so that's not shocking either. And again, selfishly, there's not maybe a better place to go for a football game than Kyle Field in College Station, 102,733. It's the biggest stadium in the SEC. 5 of them, by the way, seat over 100,000. But, boy, with the band and the cadets, it's great, great tradition. Hard place to win. But purely selfishly, Matt, yes, I enjoy going there. And I love the fact they're playing 9 games. And, you know, Missouri, everybody gets to fatten up on a lower-level team a la Central Arkansas this season. I think it's Arkansas Pine Bluff next season. And then you get another, of course, non-conference game against a smaller school usually. But now you can have 10 legit games out of 12, 9 in the SEC and 1 power non-conference school, which for Missouri is going to be Kansas and Illinois most of the next several years, either or. So I love it. You know, these guys are getting paid a lot of money to coach football, so they should not shy away from challenges. And you want to be in the SEC, here you go. Have at it. And, you know, multiple teams will make the playoffs, probably a good 4 this year, I would think, from probably the SEC and the Big Ten.
He is Chris Trevino, part of the Missouri Radio Network. Chris, thank you so much for taking some time with us. Enjoy the off weekend coming up, and hopefully we can talk to you again down the line.
Sounds good, Matt. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you. That's Chris Trevino joining us, talking all things Mizzou football. Again, they are off this upcoming weekend, and then they've got a matchup against an Alabama team that's currently ranked number 10. That was a good win for Alabama against Georgia this past weekend. We'll see what they do against Vanderbilt coming up. Vanderbilt's a legit team, so that's going to be an interesting game. Maybe Alabama will be a little bit beat up going into that game against Missouri. We'll jump back into Cardinals baseball as we continue to take you through the evening. We've got you till 8 o'clock tonight. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. I want to run through just a couple more comments that have come in here. Again, we're going to replay some of what John Mozeliak had to say earlier today coming up in our next segment. Text message from the 314 says, the Cardinals are handcuffed by poor contract decisions. Contreras, Arenado, and Gray. Unless ownership eats a substantial amount of those contracts, this could take years. I would actually disagree with the premise there. The Arenado contract looks bad right now. Based off his production, the contract looks bad. They're probably, to move Arenado, you're probably going to have to eat at least half of the money left on that deal. That's the contract. He has He has just declined. That's what happens when you get older. He is a declining player, and he has declined 3-4 straight years in a row. I don't think the Contreras contract and the Gray contract are bad. The Contreras contract, without a doubt, is not a bad contract. He has outperformed his contract by any metrics. If you were to trade him, I would hope that you wouldn't have to eat a penny of that contract, because he has outperformed the contract. From a production standpoint, he has more than taken care of how much he's been paid for. You got to remember, people get stuck on what Gray is going to make next year. Is he a $35 million a year pitcher? No, he's not. But you got to remember, that contract was backloaded in a serious, major way. I believe it was $10 million that he was paid in year number one. I'm going to look that up real quick, but I believe it was $10 million. Yeah, he got paid $10 million in year one. That's how much the Cardinals paid him in year one. So they gave him the backloaded contract, knowing that they weren't going to pay much early on. So on that one, I think you have to look at the totality of the money. Now, if you're a team trying to acquire Sonny Gray, because it's what he's owed next year is $35 million plus a $5 million buyout if you don't pick up his 2027 option. So what you're trading away is either essentially a one-year $40 million contract because there's a buyout, or a two-year $65 million contract because that option in the final year is $30 million. That doesn't look great. So you can argue that it's a bad contract based off just the number for next year, but it is not a bad contract based off the totality of it. The Cardinals paid $10 million for Sonny Gray in the first season. So that's not a bad contract. That's all I'm saying. Message comes in on the stream, says, I'm 100% cool with Bloom and his Moneyball ways as long as they lower stadium tickets and concessions. I feel like they're charging fans as if they're trotting out a team of Albert Pujols and friends. I'm not saying that they don't ever lower prices, but they're not doing that. That's not part of the deal. By the way, I don't know if I really buy the whole Heim Bloom Moneyball thing. Like, we were talking about this earlier in Redbird Rush Hour. He wants to increase pro scouts. He wants more scouts in the organization. Human beings who go to games and practices and showcases and look at baseball players. That's what he wants to do. Calling him a Moneyball guy, is he going to be more advanced in the data that the Cardinals use? Yeah, of course he is, because the Cardinals are not advanced at all right now. But I don't think that's fair. Real quick, we'll get to John Mozeliak coming up in just a minute. I have to give our good friend Kyle Sixta a little bit of grief over something. This is not connected to sports whatsoever. But while we have a moment before we get to break, Kyle, you recommended to me over the weekend that I should go to the St. Charles Oktoberfest, correct?
I did.
Okay. I have a beef with the good folks at the St. Charles Oktoberfest.
Let's hear it.
My beef is, so I get there, and it's an Oktoberfest. I wanted to drink a beer. I'm not a big drinker. I had a doctor's appointment the other day, and he's like, how do you drink a lot? I was like, maybe 20 drinks a year? Like, I'm really not a big drinker, but I wanted to have a beer at Oktoberfest. You have to buy the wristband to even have the right to buy the beer. Okay, mm-hmm. Whatever. I'll take it. I didn't like it, but that's the way these things work. I'm not gonna complain too much about that. Here's what I'm gonna complain about. I don't carry cash, Kyle. Like most people nowadays, I'm just not a cash carrier.
I'm bad about it as well.
Yeah, I should probably do it more often. If you get into a situation, you need to have cash. I get it. I'm not a cash carrier. So to buy the wristband for $5, they only took cash. Come on, people. Come on. And they have an ATM machine right there next to it, which of course has the fees and everything that goes along with it. And I have a strong moral stance against paying money to access my own money. I will not, if I can avoid it, if I'm not in an emergency situation, I will not go to an ATM machine that's going to charge me to access my own money. So I was frustrated with that. I wasn't going to do it. Just was not going to do it. I stood firm. And here's where I got really annoyed. They had people at the Oktoberfest who were clearly like the same people as the wristband people, because they were wearing the same shirts. They had the same thing in the back. The people who were like selling the raffle tickets or the 50-50, I don't know what they were. You know what they were carrying, Kyle?
What were they carrying?
They were carrying credit card machines.
Oh, boy.
So the wristband people are cash only because what are you, if you're going to a to an Oktoberfest, what are you probably going to do?
Probably going to have some drinks.
You're going to drink a beer. So they knew that they had a captive audience, that if you did not have cash on you, you are not going to walk into an Oktoberfest and not buy the wristband. And the only thing you can do is go to the ATM and pay that exorbitant fee. So in addition to the $5 for the thing, you're paying for the other. And they knew it. They know what they're doing. You know what I did?
What'd you do?
I walked out. Did not buy the wristband. Did not go to the ATM machine. Was with the family. We left and we went and had lunch elsewhere.
Way to stay strong, Matt. They lost your business.
I know. I might be the first person in the history of Oktoberfest to walk into an Oktoberfest with the intent of drinking a beer and saying, nope, not doing it. Not going to do it. I'm going to walk out of here. So to the good folks at the St. Charles Oktoberfest, just let me buy my wristband with a credit card. Don't gouge me with an ATM machine that's right there. Come on. If I choose to go back, or maybe I'll just remember to take cash one way or the other. So, Kyle, I blame you because we were talking about Oktoberfest, and you've been in St. Charles for a while. You're like, oh, you should, Matt, you should go to the St. Charles one. It's pretty cool. It's nice.
It's a good time.
Mm-mm. No, it's not.
I apologize. I led you astray.
They try to bend you over and force you to go spend money on an ATM machine to get access to your own money. Sometimes I am motivated by the oddest thing. Okay, that is my rant. Thank you for putting up with me. We are going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to start to go back through some of the things that John Mozeliak did have to say today during the press conference. So we'll do that coming up in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Welcome back in. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we get set to take you until 8 o'clock this evening. Again, tomorrow is a big day. The Chaim Bloom introductory press conference, we're going to air that for you at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. And then as soon as that gets done, we are going to have instant reaction and coverage of it all the way until 1 o'clock. So the press conference will probably get done 10:30, 10:40 or so. And at that point, Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, myself, Chris Ranji, we are all going to be with you. We'll see who else we might be able to get involved, but that's going to take up pretty much the rest of the time after the press conference all the way until the end of the 12 o'clock hour, which is the general Gas House Gang hour. So we've got you covered coming up tomorrow, and look forward to being able to talk with you on what's going to be a very busy and very important day. We've talked through a lot of what John Mozeliak had to say earlier today. I know when we get to this point of the evening, there's probably a good number of people who are listening who did not hear the press conference. What I'm not going to do, I'm not just going to replay the press conference for you, but what I do want to do is play a number of the things that Mo did say, and then I'll give you my comments on some of them. So we're going to have a little bit of fun with audio right now as we go through much of the press conference and what was said as John Mozeliak opened up his comments today. He did acknowledge that it is a good time for him to move on from the position.
I've been asked over the past year why I stepped down. And to me, it became simple. I love this job, but I also knew it was time for a change. Trying to reinvent yourself every year can be challenging. The drumbeat was getting louder, candidly real loud, for a new voice, and I heard it. Speaking of change, I do believe it can be a good thing. Having a fresh voice, a different perspective, new ideas will be healthy for the St. Louis Cardinals.
There continues to be a lot of focus on what has happened recently, the last 3 years of not being a playoff team. Even, and anytime I mention that, I always hear from folks will say, well, they also haven't won the playoff success over the last 10 years hasn't really been there as well.
I pushed back on that a little bit. Not that they had more success than they did, but I thought there was some flukiness that went along with it. The playoffs are inherently fluky. But to people's credit who push back when I say that, the bottom line is the bottom line, and they haven't had the playoff success that you would like to have in recent years, even before this last three-year stretch with no playoffs at all. All that being said, Mo, a good number of years, he's been the president of baseball operations since the start of the 2008 season. He's been in the organization for 30 years, and he made it clear he's proud of his body of work.
Well, there are a lot more highs than lows, so I think that makes it easy to balance. But it is a demanding job, and I understood that. You know, when you think about the 30 clubs you can work for, not all are the St. Louis Cardinals and have the history of the St. Louis Cardinals. So, you know, I took a lot of pride in us being successful, took a lot of pride in us trying to be innovative and creative throughout the years. And, you know, did we get it? Were we 100% perfect? No. We made mistakes. We recognize that. But there is something to be said. If you're not making mistakes, you might not be trying. So, you know, overall, when I look back at these last 18 years or the 30 years, I do it with great pride.
When you think about somebody in his position, he's not just constructing a roster. He is in a very important position of management. And there are a lot of people who have worked under him. And a lot of those people have gone on to do really, really important things in other organizations. And he does, when he was talking about his impact on the game of baseball, his impact on the Cardinals, talked a little bit about the impact that he had on the people that he has come in contact with.
You know, I'm not up here to pat myself on the back, but I hope that the people I've worked with, that I have had some positive influence on them. And, you know, obviously there's going to be a new regime, there's going to be changes, and there's going to be things done maybe differently than I may have done them. But that doesn't make it right or wrong. But that's the ability to, or the good thing to have that new voice. You know, as I think back at my career and the people you've touched or the people that you were involved in, and there's so many of them, but I feel like I when I look back at my career, I hope the impact I made on them was something positive and lasting.
There's been a lot of talk, and I've been somebody that has certainly discussed this a fair amount. What was it like for him this year? Because he was still the president of baseball operations, but much of the infrastructure from a staffing standpoint, it was no longer his guys. The Heim Bloom infrastructure, people who came to the Cardinals to work for Heim Bloom, were in place. The Rob Serfolios of the world, and there was many others beyond that. So you had to wonder if this year was different for him, but what he said today was that really this year did not feel all that different.
It was fairly normal. You know, my interactions with Heim and Surf on what was happening on the player development side, you know, we had a standing meeting every Monday, so I was kept in the loop. I did not spend a lot of time traveling to minor league cities like I've done for the last 17 years, but that's why I have confidence in directionally where this is going. But as far as like the day-to-day, I was still very much involved and kind of did my normal job. Big question is, what am I going to do tomorrow? Right? That's the stress.
Benjamin, do you have one?
I do, yeah. Mo, from the day you were hired until now, can you share some insight into how building a baseball team, just the business of being in the front office, has changed, evolved?
Sure. I guess you're asking me to go back to our, 1993. Payrolls were much different. I think free agents were paid on what they did, not what they might do. Collectively, the draft had unlimited rounds, so you could take a lot of shots on goal, if you will. But what's changed is just the economic landscape of the game. And I think what's happening right now in baseball is you're starting to see a wider and wider spread of the haves and have-nots. And so if you're not part of the haves, then you got to be really, really smart on how you start strategically thinking about roster building. And so, you know, under Bill DeWitt, you can think back to like 1998, you know, when we drafted, or 1997, when we drafted Rick Ankiel, and 28 other teams passed on him at the time, and we took a shot. And so Bill always had us thinking about drafting and development. And I think over the 30 years, I think we did a pretty good job at that. And now it's what more can you squeeze out of that orange as you try to get more on the margins. And I think you look at teams right now that are successful that aren't large market teams, i.e. Milwaukee, they're doing a really good job at that. And that's what we need to replicate.
Bottom line for the Cardinals right now, they're not meeting expectations. They're not playing at the level that you want them to play at. They're not winning the number of games that you want them to win. And the calendar's turning to October, and their season is over. Mozeliak said there continues to absolutely be high expectations for this team. Those expectations have not been met, but he believes the team is on the right track.
When we look back at the past few years, we haven't gotten to where we wanted to, right? I think under Bill DeWitt and that ownership group, we always went into it trying to get to October and hopefully get to the World Series and win. Obviously, there's only one winner every year. I think the past few years, we've had some headwinds. When you think back to just like, you know, the revenues have changed. But overall, I think where the minor league system is, it's in a strong spot. I think we've had a couple strong drafts, which is certainly going to be helpful. I think our international department has done yeoman's work, and I think you'll start to see some of those returns in the future. So, you know, net-net, I feel like our system's in a pretty good spot. So I would be optimistic.
Being on that right track, much connected to the fact that a new regime is coming in. Chaim Bloom is going to be the president of baseball operations. And Mo says that he feels like all the changes that go along with a regime change will be good for the organization.
What does change mean for the St. Louis Cardinals organization? And above all, what does it mean for our fans? The economic landscape of baseball has continued to shift over the past decade. How you build rosters looks completely different based on your market size. The ability for a small market team to be successful will require the following traits: innovation, never lose sight of your core principles, and remain nimble and flexible in the ever-fluid environment. And finally, I want to wish the new leadership team success. It's been a pleasure working with Chaim and Cerf over the past year, and I wish them the best. 30 years is a long time. 18 in the seat is a long time. But it has been an honor and a privilege to do this in this great city of St. Louis. It is a baseball city. It is my home. And I think the future for this city and this team is bright. So thank you.
This next cut, and we've talked about it, but I'll just say it again, might be the single most important thing that was said and might be the thing that most points us towards what we are going to hear coming up tomorrow. Mo is proud of the fact that they did not do a true rebuild during his tenure, but that might change based off the words that come out of Chaim Bloom's mouth coming up tomorrow.
The unique thing about the role I had with the Cardinals is we never tried to rebuild. The words you may hear tomorrow might be different, but that's for them to speak. But in terms of regrets, I don't have any.
Sidebar on that very quickly. I don't think Mo says that unless, because he knows what's going to be said tomorrow. I don't think he says that unless there is a clear indication that that's going to be the message coming up tomorrow from Chaim Bloom. So what does it take to be a really good team, to have the success that you want to have? Well, part of it is having great players. And part of it is the fan support. Part of it is playing in a ballpark that people love going to in a city that supports them. Like, there's a lot of different things. And Mo kind of hit on all of them because there's so many things that you throw into the pot that eventually results in a good winning team. And Mo said they're still looking for that next great player as the organization is continuing to fight through some other adversity.
As you guys can imagine, we've always had just like a successful group of core players. Dating back to when the Cardinals first acquired Mark McGwire, and then the emergence of Albert Pujols, Yadier Molina. But at that same time, we acquired Jim Edmund, Scott Rolen, and then you fast forward to Matt Holliday, and then the emergence of a Matt Carpenter, and then acquiring Berkman, Beltran, and then that led us into the Goldschmidt, Arenado era. But what ended up happening in that time was, you know, the elite player lost a step. And that's the tough part to balance, because, you know, we definitely felt like internally we were still producing a lot of those complementary players, but we didn't have the type of player that emerged as the next great. And when I reflect on this, I mean, I even go back to something like when Oscar Tavares passed away, and all of a sudden we had a pivot because we lost that future middle of the order hitter that we thought we were going to have. And those are difficult challenges. But some of those headwinds are also what's happening in our city, with, you know, fans sometimes complain about parking, the safety. And these are all issues that have to be addressed as we continue to move forward. But I think, you know, with the investments that are happening downtown, I think everybody should be excited about where this city is headed. And so the Cardinals have always been successful, not because of our TV contract, but really from our fan base. And if we can get people to feel safe and wanting to come back down here again and re-engage, I think that's where the Cardinals will take that step forward. And as far as like the infrastructure of what's happening with the baseball operations specifically, they're going to be positioned well. Smart group of guys working upstairs. They understand where they need to go, what they need to accomplish. And from that standpoint, now that I put my fan hat on, I'm excited about the future.
He did comment a couple things on this past season. Don't want to spend too much time on this because we are looking forward, but I thought there were a couple notable things. First off, this season coined the runway season. Did they learn what they would have liked to have learned this season? Well, not totally.
Probably not as clearly as we'd hoped, right? I think some players we were hoping to learn a little bit more about. But in the end, I think that's the challenge of this offseason and what really lies ahead in the future. And I don't want to get into what I think each player needs to do. I think that's Haim and his team and Ollie have to like decide what that looks like. But you know, I do think the one takeaway I do have on this year was a lot of those younger players learned a lot. They had a drink from the fire hose. Maybe they didn't make the right adjustments or the adjustments soon enough, but hopefully they grow from that. You know, when you get an opportunity to play every day, the goal is, can you produce? Can you post? And if you can do those two things, you can be in this game a long time. But if you're not doing those two things, things can be difficult for you. And I think our players learned a lot from that this year.
Also, this team, they were in playoff contention most of the year. They were not mathematically eliminated till the final weekend of the season. They would make little runs, and they would get three or so games back. They're a team that sold at the deadline. They're a team that made one move in the offseason to get Phil Maton, a guy that doesn't even finish the season with the team because he gets traded. So considering how close they got, considering what happened with the Cincinnati Reds and the way they were able to steal that final spot from the New York Mets, does Mo have any regrets in not doing more to the roster this year?
Reflecting back on this season last night, and you think about like close games you lose or games you give up in the ninth, or in the extra innings. And that's why, like, as a manager, as a coach, you are always trying to impress upon players, like, everything does matter. Because it might not feel like it at that given moment, but it does. And when you finish three or four games out of something, or you go into the final series finally being eliminated, it just shows you how close these margins are. And I don't regret anything we did this year in the sense of we knew it was going to be, you know, difficult to try to thread this needle. You know, if you're looking at hindsight, would it have been smarter to try to trade some of the players that we ended up trading in the offseason? But we wanted to give our fan base some level of hope. We wanted to try to see if a couple guys did click and get hot. And, you know, unfortunately, we did come up short.
And then just two more quick things for Mo before we wrap this up in terms of playing back much of what he said today. He was asked, does he see a scenario where in the future he is serving as a president of baseball operations for another team?
To answer your question, I don't envision myself doing that. Have some connection to the game at some point, possibly. But I do think for the next couple months, I'd really like to just catch my breath and step away.
A lot of people have thought maybe he has some type of role with the Cardinals moving forward. There are still some projects that are being worked on, most notably the spring training complex, which he has been very, very involved in that. So would there be a possibility in the very near future he could be working in the organization again, not so much in baseball operations, but working to finish out some special projects?
I don't know, but I don't think so. We'll see.
That is John Mozeliak's press conference earlier today. When it comes to his future, I kind of, and I don't have any inside information on this, but I kind of expect one of two things to happen. I think he stays involved in the game of baseball at some point. I don't know how long he stays away. He's previously said, not today, but he's previously said that he feels like out of respect for Haim, he probably needs to be away from the Cardinals for a while, that if he were to come back and do like special projects and things like that, it might feel like he's looking over the shoulder. So I think he's cognizant of that. But I could certainly see a scenario where he comes back to the Cardinals in more of a business-type side and not so much a baseball-type side and works on projects and does some other things. I think that might be something that he would have some interest in. Or I could see him going to another organization and not being a president of baseball operations or a general manager or anything, but certainly serving as a consultant. People have connected him to the Colorado Rockies because he's got deep ties to Denver and previously worked for that organization. So maybe that's what it's going to look. Maybe he's just going to completely get out of baseball. I do suspect we are not going to hear from him for quite some time. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the program. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it for just a couple more minutes here on a Graybar Sports Open Line. Coming up after the 8 o'clock news, it is a Gas House Gang replay. If you missed it from earlier today, I joined both Tom Ackerman and Chris Ranji immediately following the Mo press conference. And we talked a little bit about what Mo had to say, but we also talked about what it looks like for the team moving forward. Thought it was a good conversation. So if you missed it earlier today, it's coming up. If you didn't miss it earlier today, you can listen to it again and enjoy it again. Hopefully that would be the goal. A reminder for you of what's going to be coming up tomorrow. Haim Bloom meets with the media as the Cardinals president of baseball operations for the first time at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. We expect the DeWitts to be part of that conversation as well. That will probably go maybe 35, 40 minutes or so. And then as soon as that is done, the entire KMOX sports team will assemble and we'll be with you until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Tom Ackerman, Chris Ranji, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, myself, we'll all kind of be in and out. Might have some other folks that join us as well. Certainly we'll be able to take your comments. And so tomorrow is the day where we start to learn the true direction of where this team is going and what it might look like this upcoming season. I said it multiple times today. I felt like that comment from Mo today where he talked about not rebuilding during his tenure, but that may change based off what we hear from Haim. I thought that was a really important thing that was said, and we'll see what that actually ends up looking like or sounding like, I guess, when Haim talks coming up tomorrow. So be tuned in. We'll be with you starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning for our coverage of the Haim Bloom press conference. That is it for this edition of the program. Thanks to Brendan Schaefer and Chris Gervino for joining us. And we will talk to you again very soon for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carman Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.